Hello and welcome back to the Age of Sigmar podcast from the wide world of wargaming. Here with me, this is Alex Gonzalez, and here with me today are John and Matthew. Both Jeremy and Garrett are going to be out today, but we have a lot to talk about between the San Antonio Escalation Tournament, Adepticon, and some of the previews that came out from Games Workshop there. And we'll also be talking about a tactics spotlight for an order army in particular. John, what's on your workbench?
Oh, yeah. How's it going, Alex? Not too much this week. I finished up those gnaw holes that I was working on, and I also finished the assembly and priming of the Verminlord warp seer that I started building last week. And then now, I'm just kind of relaxing in the game room, the man cave, as it were. I got in a good game today against our good friend Logan Mulroney, Garrett's brother, over in Santa Cruz. I actually met him this morning. Actually, it was myself, my wife, Logan, and then we met with Michael Schwartz from the 40K podcast, as well as his wife. We had a nice brunch on the coast. It was like 78 degrees over in there in Santa Cruz, beautiful blue skies. And then afterwards, we headed over to Mythic Games, real nice game store in Santa Cruz, and played a little 2,000-point game of Age of Sigmar. You know, Logan, all his armies are back in Pennsylvania right now. He moved there last year with his wife, and he's just out here finishing up the last little bits of his PhD. So I went ahead and brought him my Ideneth Deepkin to loan him the army so we could get a game on. Plus, Ideneth is one of those armies that's so easy to play. It's a nice one to loan to people. So he didn't take anything too difficult. He brought in a Kellyan King. He brought two Soul Scryers. He brought Tidecaster and the other character. I forget the name of him, the one that brings back the infantry guys. Sorry, name's slipping me. As well as 30 Thralls, 20 Reavers, two groups of three of the Eels. So a nice little list. He put two of the ships down. I myself, of course, ran my Skaven Tide, so I didn't want to bring anything too hard against Logan, knowing he hadn't really played too much this edition. So I brought a Verminlord Warpseer, of course, since I finished building him. He was taking the trait Master of Magic to give him +1, as well as the Suspicious Stone to give him a second 5-up Feel No Pain. Then I brought the Verminlord Corruptor. I brought a Greyseer on the Screaming Bell, and of course the Deathmaster Snitch, to jump out and do some assassin work on those nasty little sea elves. My list also included 100 clan rats, a unit of Giselles, a Hell Pit Abomination, just wanted to see what he was going to do on the tabletop, a Warp Lightning Cannon. I brought the Bell of Doom. Looking at my list here, I see I actually included a Suffocating Gravetide and then forgot to take the model with me, so I never used that. And then the list itself was 50 points short for an extra command point. So we got a pretty good game on. We played three turns out. I actually ran one of the missions that's going to be going for the upcoming BAO. I put the BAO missions, I'm not sure if Frontline has posted them yet, but they're out there already. And we actually played the round two of the team tournament mission, which is Star Strike, but I used one of the team or narrative map deployment types. So this is one that actually looks like a chevron. So one player's deployment is a triangle that goes from corner to corner and then to the center of the board. And then the other player has two triangles in opposite corners. So kind of an odd little board shape, again, like a chevron almost. And then, of course, being Star Strike, the objectives come down mid-game. So it was a pretty good game. He killed a bunch of stuff. I killed a bunch of stuff. I had like maybe 10 clan rats left at the end of the game. So we killed like 90 of my clan rats and killed my assassin and all that good stuff. But I was able to kill all of his characters. And I was able to hold those objectives, mostly because each time one of the objectives came down, it basically landed where I had units and he didn't. And so it gave me an early lead on points. And by turn three, the game wasn't over, but we decided that, we could go ahead and call it a day. So I headed home from Santa Cruz and really just got home about a half hour before we started recording here. And, you know, because of some of the sort of sound qualities that I've heard or sound problems I've heard on some of our previous recordings, I went ahead and ran a hard line from my router into my computer. So hopefully the sound quality, at least on my end, is a little bit better this week. And poof, after that busy day of gaming and hanging out on the coast and a little bit of IT work at the end, I've decided to crack open a fresh bottle of the Hennessy XO that I have. That's a extra old cognac. And it says right here on the package, Hennessy XO is defined by desire. With each sip of Hennessy XO, a new place is discovered, a distinct sensation felt, and an extraordinary story shared. And it says that there are 7 chapters. Each time you take a sip, it's a different chapter. You start off with chapter 1, the sweet notes. Going into chapter 2, the rising heat. Chapter 3, the spicy edge. Chapter 4, the flowing flame. Mm-hmm. Chapter 5, the chocolate lull. Chapter 6, called wood crunches. Like, after you've had 6 drinks of this, it tastes like crunchy wood. What the hell? And finally, chapter 7, the infinite echo. So here I am. I've got it in my favorite glass with a big giant round ice cube. Let's try chapter 1, the sweet notes. Oh, delicious. That was wonderful. Matthew, what have you been up to this week?
There we go.
I can never look you in the eyes again. Not a whole lot. I've been working on a Daughters of Cain commission. I had a little procedure done on Thursday, so I'm on some pain medication currently, so I'm not drinking any alcohol, but I am surviving on Red Bull currently. I haven't been sleeping a lot trying to get this job finished.
Could that be something to do with the Red Bull you're drinking?
Yeah, I mean, you know, probably like, I'm like, oh, it's 10 o'clock. I need to stay up for like 2 more hours, so I will drink 240 milligrams of caffeine because mathematically that works out in my head somehow. But yeah, trying to get this job finished up. I haven't played, let's see. I played in an event 2 weeks ago that I won. It was just like a little 18-player RTT. I don't think I've been on since the GT we played at 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Oh,
wow. I took 4 there, I think. That bumped me just 1 spot ahead of Alex Gonzalez in the ITC. I bumped him from 2nd to 3rd, which I've mentioned multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure he's always within earshot that I'm one
spot ahead
of him.
So Matthew, are you saying that you're just a little bit better than Alex?
Just
or that
a little.
Lucky to be there at all, and he'll be just falling by the wayside as you kind of hold on to the lead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't in the infamous words of Vin Diesel, it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning.
Yeah, well,
also,
I mean, like
Sigmar and street racing are the same thing. So.
Yeah, for sure. We play for keeps in AOS.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so that's what I've been up to. Just painting mostly. I've been kind of confined to a chair since Thursday, so just trying to get a bunch of work done while I have an excuse to sit down for 14 hours a day. Alex, what have you been up to, man?
Yeah, well, you know, on my workbench, I just have water. Pretty boring evening for me today with that, but, you know, kind of over-caffeinated earlier, which is not surprising. You know, I have on my workbench a couple of Dreadblade Herodons to build up. Played, our good friend Ben Schmoller was in town this weekend. He is the head TO for both 40K and AOS for T-Shift, which is happening in July of this year. And, you know, we did mention that in the last couple of episodes as well. And he came up with a buddy from Bend. We played some AOS and, you know, we had a really good time. Yeah, got to fight against some Gristle Gore with Night Haunt. It was a Night Haunt list. I haven't brought Night Haunt in a while since I've primarily been playing Legion. So it was fun to play and borrowed a lot of Jeremy's Night Haunt for that since I didn't have any Dreadblades built up yet. And I really enjoyed the new list. It was a lot of teleporting shenanigans. So I'm definitely going to build mine up, get them all painted, and start messing around with things here and there, especially in preparation for General's Handbook 2019. Yeah, in the meantime, though, getting that done and nothing else too crazy. Now, you know, when we do take a look at some events that happened this weekend, there are some big ones and there are some small ones. One, you know, that was a little bit smaller, we do want to take a little bit of a spotlight to, because our good friend John from the Texas Masters League did run it, or not run it, but he won it. You know, there was a Texas event for the Masters League, specifically the San Antonio Escalation Tournament, and John from the Austin Weird Knobs did win the event. And you know, it was kind of an interesting format. It wasn't a standard tournament. John, can you give us some insight about how that event was?
Sure. Well, like I said, I was just kind of my eye on what Jonathan was up to after talking to him last week. You know, real cool guy, and checked out his podcast a little bit during the week, so kind of got familiar with that. Great show, worth listening to. And then, just thought I'd take a look at this Texas Masters League Escalation Tournament, the San Antonio Escalation Tournament. And it was kind of interesting. So there was actually four rounds, okay? And in each round, they added an additional 500 points. So round one was 500 points. Round two was 1,000. Round three was 1,500 points. And game four was 2,000 points. And of course, with each increase in points, they also increased the length of the round. So, you know, they weren't all 3-hour rounds. In fact, that first 500 point round was only 1 hour long. And then, of course, this is a typical Texas Masters tournament. So we've got our awards of Slambo's Lament, as well as Best Painted, Best Sport, Best Overall, Best General. And one of the interesting things was that as you add points each round, you could add battalions. And when you add a battalion, you could add an artifact to go with that battalion. So to me, this was just kind of one of those unique little events. You know, I'm often pointing out that, especially when we're talking ITC events, and of course, when we're also talking Texas Masters events, they both have the same rules, right, Alex? What's the first rule of the ITC? What's the first rule of the Texas Masters? There are no rules, right?
Exactly.
So that's the best part, is the TO basically has the freedom to, you know, think of any format that he think is going to be enjoyed and played by his local players, by people that are willing to travel and what have you. And so I see something like an escalation league, I mean, or an escalation tournament. What a lot of fun, right? You know, it's four rounds. You get to have a little list variety. Your first couple rounds go quick. They're easy, right? 500 points. And then by the end of the day, when you're all warmed up and you've been practicing with kind of pieces of the army, you put that whole thing on the table and boom, you play a big 2,000 point game to end things up. But I mean, to me, it just sounds like a lot of fun. So did you get a chance, Matthew, to take a look at any of this? What did you think?
So I didn't actually really get a chance to go over the Texas Masters stuff specifically. Like I said, I've been kind of out of commission for a couple days and then just head down trying to catch up on work. So,
oh yeah, I understand. But you know, on the other hand, once it heals, having that second thumb added to your right hand, you're gonna basically be able to just paint two models at once. So
yeah,
it'll be pretty amazing.
So many more dice now, it's wild. I can't, you know, in retrospect, like a second index finger probably would have been better.
Mm.
But I can give two thumbs up with one hand now. So I mean,
yeah, you know, it's the two thumbs up for your bros, the two index fingers might accomplish something else. So either one has its advantages.
Damn it, John. We'll edit that in post so we don't get kicked off of them.
Hey, I edited myself. I could have said a whole lot more, and I said less.
Boy. Well, you know, even with that that extra thumb there, you know, you mentioned getting the done, Matthew, and I believe you have a new painting service. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been commission painting for Frontline Gaming for a while, but I do side jobs as well, just to kind of fill in. Mostly for local people too, just kind of extra work on the weekends, filling at night, whatever it is. But I went full time commission painting about 2 weeks ago. I'm officially a stay at home dad. My wife got a promotion, so
what?
Congratulations to her. Yeah. So
congrats.
You're not gonna climb the pole anymore, is what you're saying?
I am not going to climb the pole anymore.
Okay, wow.
And that's all I will say about that, and we'll leave it up to listeners' imagination to decide what I did previously.
You know your tips aren't going to be as good.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, you never know how good of a painter is he.
Yeah, if I deliver the models personally.
He's a pretty good painter, I will say.
He is a good painter. While I'm not getting a commission done by you, I did at least pay for some of the models that you're getting painted there, since I had accidentally lost one of Jeremy's models at the tournament last week. I had to buy a kit. Hopefully that got sent to you.
So actually what happened was, I believe you PayPal Jeremy money, and then I bought a new kit of models. He's just reimbursing me the cost when I finished the commission. So through roundabout ways, you did end up buying him.
Excellent. Like a secret investor in your service. I like it.
I appreciate it, John. It's kind of you.
And Matthew, real quick, just to give yourself a little bit of a plug, what is the name of your personalized painting service?
Yeah. I have a Facebook page and an Instagram page, Iron Hand Painting. Most of it is just photos from the last 3 or 4 commissions I've completed. I just kind of threw them together real quick. So it's nothing fancy, but my contact information is on there and stuff. So if you are interested in having any work done, you're more than welcome to check out one of those pages and get my contact information and get in touch with me, and I would appreciate it.
Nice. Iron Hand Painting. That's interesting that you didn't go with two thumbs, but I can see Iron Hand as well.
Three thumbs painting. I already have two thumbs. I'm adding.
You down with TTP?
Oh man, that's it. Now, mind blown. Three thumbs painting.
Great, yeah. Well, you know, I'll probably have to hit you up jobs here and there down the line as well. Going back to Texas Masters League, John Weird Knob doing great. Congrats on the win. Now, there were a lot of other things here that came this weekend, one of which was Adepticon, which is one of the largest wargaming events in the country and also the world. There's a lot of events there, 40K, Age of Sigmar, X-Wing, lots of demos for lots of different events. But Games Workshop also does a preview, at Nova, at LVO, and at Adepticon, where they talk a little bit about what's happening next with all of their war games. And they did not disappoint this time. And in this preview, at least maybe 60-75% of it was centered around Age of Sigmar, which was great. There was 2 Battletome previews, as well as previews for a game system and a new expansion to a game system. You know, we saw Caradon Overlords for Shadespire or Night Vault. We saw Warcry, which is a new skirmish game, which we all thought was primarily Chaos, but looks like it's going to be Chaos plus other factions from other Grand Alliances. And then we talked about, they previewed both Fire Slayers getting their own book, which Jeremy is super pleased about. And
a new book, actually, yeah. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, are they the not including Stormcast Eternal, does that make them the first to get an updated codex after already having one?
That Korn would be the Korn.
Yeah, second behind Korn. Okay.
Yeah, and then, of course, the big one, Hedonites of Slaanesh, which I gotta say is the coolest name they could have given him. John, what were your thoughts on these previews?
I honestly looked at all of those and I said, man, Michael Schwartz is already hard enough to play against, and now he's gonna have a bunch of creepy new toys. I don't know what to say. I will say the new Keeper of Secrets model, that is an amazing model.
So good.
GW hitting it out of the park always. The endless spells, I mean, I had a serious cringe factor looking at each one of those. My flesh literally crawls as I'm looking at those models, but amazing sculpts, of course. I really do like the mirror with the hand holding it. Oh, that just looks so wrong to me. So I think it's good. Of course, we don't know too much about the rules. I imagine that's going to be another week or two of teasing and building up, kind of releasing rules one or two at a time, like they did for Skaven and for Korn, and then we'll get our preview for those. I myself will not be probably buying too much Slaanesh. I mean, I already have Korn as well as Nurgle, so I don't own all 4 gods yet, so there's always a chance that I'll get some Slaanesh going, but I'm saying now, I'm not planning on getting any of that stuff, especially when, like I said, just looking at pictures of the models just, just makes my skin crawl. It's like, oh my gosh, this just seems bad things are going to happen to you if you get near any of that stuff. So, Matthew, I mean, what do you think of those new sculpts? Are you looking forward to painting some of those at Iron Hand Painting, or what's going on?
Just all the sly plugs. I appreciate it, guys. You're the best. Yeah, actually, I mean, what was really surprising to me was, so when they previewed the Keeper of Secrets, all of the actual at Adepticon previews of it were, like, individual pictures of him. And when you, her, the, it, whatever pronoun is supposed to be referred to that model with, It looked like a normal character-sized model, and then they released the lineup with the three other greater demons, and the Keeper of Secrets model is as tall as one of the big Zinj birds. So that kind of caught me off guard, because I thought that model was like 3 or 4 inches tall, like maybe large character-sized.
It used to be.
Yeah, and then they released that picture, and I was like, holy hell, that model's huge. It's bigger than a like Bloodthirster. So that was really surprising. But yeah, I mean, all those models look great. They mentioned, too, that they have Glanesh mortals coming. So not sure if that's going to be more new models. I would kind of assume they're just going to revamp some Slaves to Darkness rules, because if they had new mortal models coming, I would have guessed that they would preview those as well. But yeah, I mean, that's really exciting for Slaanesh players. Generally speaking, I don't think any armies have gotten worse after getting a battle tome. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
I think they've only gotten better, which is kind of scary, because in the last maybe 3 or 4 months, Slaanesh have been creeping up. I don't think that they've won any large events. But kind of out of nowhere, 3 or 4 months ago, you started seeing them pop into third, fourth place at a lot of big events.
Yeah, they struggle, but I think there is some potential even before the Battle Tome came out here. And you got some players that have been practicing with those Slaanesh lists.
And they've kind of been in that, like, always the bridesmaid, never the bride position, like 4-1 at 5-round GTs and stuff. So I think them getting a book is probably going to make them pretty scary, because they're decent already. They just need that little extra to get them over the hump. And like I said, I don't think any armies have gotten worse with book. So I would not be surprised to 2 or 3 months from now see them top tables at a lot of tournaments. And then obviously the new Endless Prayers for the Fire Slayers are amazing looking.
Oh, right. Those look pretty cool. I like that big forge looking thing, right?
Yeah, at the giant fire demon prayer, whatever that is so cool. My favorite part about commission painting is, I mean, up until I started commission painting about a year ago, when models were released for other armies that I don't play, I was like, oh, cool, it'll be fun to see those, like, on the table across from me. But now every time cool models get released, even for 40K, and I don't play 40K, it's super exciting, because I'm like, nice, that's something cool that I'm going to get to paint at some point. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's exciting any time a new release happens, instead of just when it's a release related to my own armies. Alex, do you have any cool insight on the new releases from Adepticon?
Well, I mean, just like you guys mentioned, I'm in love with the models. The models look great, especially for Slaanesh. Our 40K co-host, Michael Schwartz, he will be very excited to see the expanded Slaaneshi models and new rules. Hopefully the Keeper becomes very good, and maybe they get a revamped stats for both 40K and AOS. Right now, the Exalted Keeper of Secrets, not only is that one of the best looking Games Workshop models for Chaos, but it's got amazing rules, as he called it himself. It's a IBCM, or it's basically a Tomahawk missile for AOS. You just throw it up front and just eliminate something.
We'll have to see if Michael will join us maybe in a few weeks once the Battle Tome is out and he's had a chance to play with it, get some sort of insight there.
That certainly will happen. Seeing the rules, hopefully, without seeing the rules, the models are gorgeous, and we really hope that those are reflected. When you mentioned Battle Tomes and armies getting Battle Tomes having kind of updated rules, just like Matthew mentioned, they are progressively getting better, and the armies are always getting kind of a you know, they're getting beefier in certain ways. I wouldn't necessarily call it codex creep or anything like that, but you know, there are a few newer battle tomes that are obviously a lot stronger than other newer battle tomes that have been coming out recently. Matthew, what was that?
Yeah, if I could just jump in real quick, because I do see that term, like, codex creep, power creep, a lot, like, floated around the internet. And I know it's been forever, like, Games Workshop's thing, it's kind of, like, codex creep has just been inevitable. But I do have an issue with that term being thrown around for AOS, because it, what are the top tier armies right now in AOS? Probably Flesh Eater, Cords, Daughters of Cain, and Iden Ethnician. Would be kind the top of. Three.
I would say Legions.
Legions of Negat. Yeah, exactly. Two of those three books are a year old plus.
Yeah. Well, and I want to say, I did not reference that into as to something that I personally...
I just wanted to go on record. Because I do notice that happening a lot, and it's not... I have noticed, I mean, being a fantasy player for a long time,
yeah,
whatever was the newest book was the best. And that is not the case with Age of Sigmar at all.
Totally correct. My only thing is, you know, and yeah, I completely agree with you. But when it comes to newer codexes, there are, you know, it's not the newest one is always the best I've seen. You know, there's obviously some might have certain hard counters to others. Right now, there's just one in particular I'm kind of hoping ends up being better. I haven't fought against a lot of Gloomspite. But I've seen Gloomspite do, let's say that they've had a mild degree of success. I haven't really seen them work out, which I also think that they might be like a slow burn army. Like people are still, there's so many different cogs to that machine that there might be one.
A lot of models to paint, a lot of armies still getting built.
For people jumping into that, you know, like the super competitive players that want to make a beat stick army. And so they're just, you know, starting from Jump Street. It takes a second to paint 160 models.
For sure. So, like, Gloomspite is one of them that's newer that, you know, it right out of the gate wasn't as, like, obvious in terms of the most effective list with, you know, compared to, say, Flesh Eater Quartz. And then another one that's kind of new was Beasts of Chaos. You know, they're not in the best spot. Like,
it's a bummer because they have one list. And that one, the double enlightened Zangor bomb list, has done well at several tournaments. And yes, technically it's Beast of Chaos, but
I
think what it comes down to is if we take all the armies that have, you know, say I would say newer battle tomes, maybe within the last year and a half, 2 years, all of those are in a better position than any army that has yet to have its battle tome or has one of the few early battle tomes. But that is really what I think we perceive a lot of that quote creep as. I think most of the battle tomes that are coming out are kind of balanced relative to each other. And some armies have better mechanics than others. We see that in the variety of builds. You know, it's like Skaven, I think, is a great example where, you know, I don't know if there is the ultimate power in the universe yet to be found in that battle tome. But what I have found is I can almost randomly reach into my Skaven collection, fill up 2,000 points worth of stuff, and I'm still having a pretty fun time and doing well with the arm. So, I mean, I think I would like to see more armies that are in that position where, you know, maybe they aren't going to be top tier, but if I can reach into my collection and have fun and do well with anything I own, then that's a great battle.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, that also goes with the other update, the other battle tome that's coming around the corner, which is Fire Slayers, which there aren't a lot of people who play Fire Slayers right now. You know, our co-host Jeremy does very well with Fire Slayers, which, you know, he was one of the few that you would actually see that would be competing on a, you know, relatively high level in you know, say the West Coast, at least, of the United States. But, you know, that new battle tome, I really do hope that there's a lot more utilization of different units because, you know, really, you know, you see primarily just, you know, certain types of builds, you know, a lot of berserkers, one unit or hearth guard, and then certain characters spread out. And that was pretty much the standard, you know, competitive list. Now, you know, there was one other, you know, very big thing to discuss in Decon. And before we move over to the tactics corner, Depticon did have a championship event for Age of Sigmar. It is a little difficult to track down lists and placings. You know, they do use a very, let's say, isolated way of keeping score and using particular formats that are a little difficult, a little bit more archaic. That's a good discussion for another episode. I do want to say congratulations to some of the winners. Sam Gold, who is part of, I believe, America. The ETC Team America. Yeah. He did win with Seraphon. We got an Adam Trunzo with Skaven, which is great. And then we have a Ben Allen. Again, lack of data. We unfortunately can't review a list or what he brought. They do not utilize Best Coast pairings or any
of the pairing software, really. You know, one thing I did notice, I did pull up the rules pack for this one, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. In the he doesn't list the missions in the rule packs. We don't get to see what the missions or what the decisions were as far as, you know, realm effects, realm spells, realm command, all of that stuff. So don't know any of that. But it does at least give the scoring. And so it says the total number of points available is 170 points divided as shown. And so 60 points of your score, 36% is going to be your battle score. And then 20 points, 12% of your score is going to be secondary objectives. And then another 6% of your score is going to be tertiary objectives. So basically we have 36% or 60 points in battle. And then another 30 points divided between secondary and tertiary objectives. Now, we don't know what the secondary objectives are. We don't know what the tertiary objectives are. Again, haven't had a chance to get a hold of the packet that they use. But I do find it interesting. That shows that at the very least, they're not using sort of out-of-the-book missions have become popular at a lot of different events. So, but I personally, as you know, am a fan of secondary and tertiary objectives. I just wish we could take a look at them. And then in addition to that, we have another 40 points or 23% of your score is appearance, and another 40 points, 23% of your score is going to be sportsmanship. So nice little breakdown as far as that goes. Battle, secondary, tertiary, appearance, sportsmanship, all rolling together to determine the overall winner. So, I mean, from what I see, I like that. It's just unfortunate that we can't know a little bit more just with no visibility. Matthew, did you get a chance to take a look at anything as far as the tournament goes, or you still lost the ether?
No, sorry. I dropped out for just a second. I don't know when I cut out. I did want to add a quick shout out for Bill Souza too. I think he took fourth or fifth maybe and got best death. He went 4-1.
He did. Yeah, killer. Congratulations.
He's the team captain for Team America for AOS, so they had a good showing. I don't know. I was saying that when I dropped out, so just wanted to add that real quick. I watched the last two games that were streamed.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't get a chance to see those. How did those go?
So they were both actually really good games. The last game was super. It was one of the better, like, tactical AOS games that I've seen streamed. Unfortunately, both those dudes were playing, like, pretty complex armies. They had a lot of movement phase shenanigans, so they timed out like at the start of turn three. They were given extra time to finish the turn, so they were allowed to run over on time, but they only played three turns. So not to take anything away from the winner of that game, Sam Gould, but it's, I don't know, timing out, only getting through three turns, but both players had probably upwards of 50% of their armies on the table still. The final score was 7-5, so I mean, it's kind of an inconclusive game. I'm not sure if the score would have been the same if they played through five turns. It Sam still could have won. I don't know if it was favoring him or not, really. It seemed kind of really clever stuff done by both players. It was a really good game to watch. Sam won the event with a Seraphon list. So that in itself is kind of wild. And he was using some of the unconventional stuff. He was playing the, I'm going to murder the name, like the Thunderstrike Starhost. Does that sound correct? The battalion?
It's going to be the Thunderquake Starhost. It's actually kind of a little bit more of one of the more common battalions I've seen for Seraphon.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the one competitive list they have. So
is this all the skinks and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the list is centered around a couple of the big monsters and then a slam spam summoning 10-man units of skinks. So, like, 2 10-man units per turn. And then teleporting them around, so they have the 2 units that can teleport, and on a 5+, they can move after they teleport. So, it's a really good objective-based army, because you can summon and then teleport your army all, and you have a 33% chance of being able to move after you teleport. So, yeah, it's, I mean, it's a good list, but it is, has zero backbone. So, props to him for piloting that 5-0, because if someone gets into position to punch you, that army just evaporates.
Agreed. Agreed. And it is, to give our listeners context too, Sam Gold's list was an Engine of the Gods and Shyish. So his Engine of the Gods did have the Ethereal Amulet. He also had an Astrolith Bearer with Incandescent Retroces. I'm going to slaughter that name. The Slaan Starmaster was his general with Great Remembrancer. He then had 3 units of 10 Skinks, 1 unit of 4 Razordons, 3 units, or, you know, 3 units of Skink Handlers, 3 Ripperdactyl Riders, and he actually had allied 5 Evocators with Great Staves or Grand Staves. He also had 1 Bastillodon and 1 Stegodon, because you can pick and choose the 2 additional behemoths besides the Engine of the Gods in a Thunderquake Starhost. Normally, you see, you know, two Stegodons or 2 Bastillodons. Normally, just 2 Bastillodons, but he brought 1 of each in his Thunderquake Starhost. And I completely agree with Matthew. You know, in the games that I fought against, almost an identical list to this. Its backbone is the big monsters, specifically the Engine of the Gods, and it's protected by the Razordons because they have, in a way, their own version of 40k Overwatch, which can be pretty deadly, and it helps mitigate an Alpha Strike. But if you do go in there and you do Alpha Strike some of the big units, or at least tie them in combat round one, the list is almost completely just neutered. So it heavily relies on being able to go first and summoning, and not only teleporting across the table, but also summoning a bunch more, you know, skinks or other units like Razordon or Ripperdactyls in order to just kind of, you know, make sure that you have way more bodies on the table than your opponent. So it's interesting to see that list win, but congratulations on Sam for getting it done.
Yeah. Last point I'll just make real quick. It was super cool. Top tables at a 180-player event. Both of those armies were beautifully painted. Like super high quality of hobby. They both had conversions in them. They were both really well done, so kind of cool to see that out of 2, like, top-level competitive players.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the winners, and, hopefully moving forward next year, we might be able to get a little bit more data from Adepticon that might, some changes might need to be made, but we'll see. That being said, again, congratulations on the winners for both the Age of Sigmar Championships, Age of Sigmar Doubles at Adepticon. There is a Tactics Corner that we typically have been having on most of our episodes. Usually we've been doing unit spotlights from... On occasion, we've been going over list spotlights or just general tactic spotlights. For this episode today, we wanted to go over an order list or an order strategy, specifically something that is infamously called the Gav Bomb. Gav Bomb is essentially a Stormcast Eternals type list with Gavriel Sureheart. He's one of the named characters for Stormcast. And, you know, he's a pretty run-of-the-mill named character. He's an infantry character, not too hard to kill off. But, he's in a Stormcast list. He can teleport, and he's got a pretty sexy command ability. John, have you encountered Gavriel Sureheart?
No, I have not encountered Gavriel Sureheart. Though, honestly, this is, as you know, I do have a Stormcast army that I kind of loan to people, but I play on occasion. And I definitely is, this is one of the characters that I want to pick up. I do want to give this a try. Of course, his big thing, I think, is that he got a charge, which is nice when you're jumping in with those Stormcasts, right? Change it from a 9-inch charge to a 3-inch charge. So I think that's the biggest thing that he's bringing to the table, as far as, you know, and he's a decent character himself. And then, of course, the main thing is he's going to bring in that big old giant block of sequiturs, and you're just going to ram them down somebody's throat, right? Those things have, you know, two attacks apiece. We're going to go in and do that Great Mace Blast on people, you know, probably cause everything that hits a demon or a night haunt that is a six gets a D3 hits instead of one. So pretty good stuff happening there, but that's about it. You know, it's kind of a one-trick pony. I think it can be effective. I still think that Stormcast is an army that, while it does have potential to do well, I think that a lot of times Stormcast are actually piloted by less experienced players. So it's one of those things that'll catch you. You know, you'll play Stormcast again and again and again and walk all over them, and then you meet that one player who is actually pretty damn good and has been playing Stormcast for a long-ass time, and all of a sudden they will tear you up. So if somebody comes walking to the table with the old Gav Bomb going on, they might be a little bit more experienced Stormcast player. So I'm expecting, Matthew, that you have definitely played against the Gav Bomb. You might have even dropped a Gav Bomb or two after a hard weekend. What's going on there?
I don't play Gav Bomb. I play good guys, so I don't touch Stormcast, but I have played against it several times. I mean, it's kind of one of those things. It is good, but it's like mid table's good, because so you pair, basically the idea is you pair Gavriel Sherhart with a unit of 20 sequiturs. You deploy him in the sky, and then you drop him down 9 inches away. His command ability is stackable, so it's one command point for 3 inches. So if you have 3 command points, you can add 9 inches to your charge.
Oh wait, it's stackable? Okay, I missed
it
out on that.
It's stackable. Well, yeah. So
for our listeners out there, you know, I do want to just give the exact wording for his command ability too, by the way, before Matthew goes on. It is called Once More for Sigmar Charge. It says, if you use his command ability, then until your next hero phase, add 3 to the charge rolls for friendly Stormcast Eternal units that are within 9 inches of this model at the start of the charge phase. So just as Matthew said, it does stack.
So I mean, it is good. Sequiturs are obviously very good. Everyone knows they're good. The issue is there's no way to give them fly. They're a very slow unit after they drop and charge. So basically, it's kind of a one-trick pony. They can drop and punch something really hard. But Gavriel Sherhart's a 5-wound model, so he's very easily killed. And then you just have a big unit of dudes that move 5 inches. They don't really have access to run and charge by themselves. They can't really buff their movement at all, so it's pretty easy to screen against it if you know what you're doing. I think it's kind of, it had its time in the sun for like a few months.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like taking a backseat to some different lists, just because it's really, if you screen properly against it, you're using, I don't know, 600 or 700 points of your army to drop and kill one unit and then walk around, because they can't really get to anything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it is really good, and it's not bad. I mean, if you build the other, whatever it is, 1300 or 1400 points of your army to be mobile and do what you need to do and hold objectives and stuff, then it is really solid to have that deep striking threat as it is to drop and punch really hard. But it's just, I think that term is pretty commonly known, so everyone kind of knows what it does, and they don't really have any tricks to get over screens other than they can charge really far. So it's good, it's cool, it's neat, it hits really hard. It kind of, it just kind of does what it seems like it would do at face value, though. So
yeah,
I don't know, I'm not like crazy blown away with it, just because it gets hung up on the fact that they can't fly. So.
Yeah, that's a tough one, and like you said, they only get that 5-inch move, so you know that's half of your army that might come down and nuke the hell out of something, and then be sitting there, you know, trying to get to something the rest
of
the game.
You'll super duper kill 10 skinks, and 3 turns, you know, running between a run and a move, going 7 or 8 inches, like So yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is good. It can be very good in certain matchups. The Flesh Eater Court's Dragon spam list, like 5 dragons, it's good against that because you can drop and just smoke a couple dragons with it. But I don't know. Against something that can screen properly, it's wasting 700 points. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meh.
I agree. I think, you know, I think it's a really good list for beginners. You know, it's something that, as you mentioned, you know, in the span of 5 games, will most realistically or easily do, you know, go, say, 3-2 at a GT. You're definitely right. I think that, you know, if someone lacks a screen, they're going to have a bad time. Yeah. And being able to stack that is something that I think takes a lot of people by surprise. I think when people initially see the, you know, that list, they go, okay, well, you know, he's going to have +3 to his charge. And then they go, nope, I'm +6 or +9 to my charge. So I'm almost automatically getting there.
I will say real quick, the only issue to stacking that is Stormcast are like an elite army and they're points heavy. So it's hard to have spare points or command points. So if you want to drop them first turn, usually you only have 1 or 2 command points. So
yeah,
their units are expensive. So you're not keeping points out to buy command points with. So yeah, like yeah. Alex said, it's a good like 3-2, 4-1. If you take it to a GT, you'll probably just raffle stomp and run over 2 or 3 people and then maybe beat 1 or 2 more fairly well, but you'll just hit some hard counters that can screen properly and just lose because half your army's wasted.
Yeah. And you know, it's something that has a lot of teeth in it, but you know, a lot of armies, even without a, you know, even without some sort of bubble wrap or any sort of roadblock, you know, some armies can just outright deny it. You know, the first ones that come to mind are other Stormcast or Nighthaunt, you know, armies that can teleport easily. Deepkin are another one that's huge, you know, that you can just keep the eels, you know, especially in one of your lists, Matthew, just, you know, keeping the eels off for an extra turn until the grav bomb drops is super useful.
Yeah, especially just because it's kind of funny that against Deepkin is a terrible matchup because usually speaking, if you're playing Deep Strike versus Deep Strike, you hold off to see who gets priority turn 3 so you can make sure they have to drop their units first. But since Deepkin get to swing first on turn 3, that doesn't work against them. even if you make them deploy first and then charge, they still get to hit you first. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, no, it is a cool trick. It's a good list. You will just crush some people right out, but you'll also run into lists where your only option to charge something is like 40 chain ghasts. And
yep.
You'll kill 2/3 of them and then get stuck. And like, good job.
Yeah. Yay. Or a bunch of clan rats.
Yeah, you'll kill a 40-man unit of clan rats. John will really miss the like 26 points that cost him.
Yeah, and you'll chew through them for a couple rounds too. You just kind of sit there in the corner. Yeah, just you guys do something.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, all right, I killed 38 of them. And you're like, cool, I have 2 left, and I don't care about battle shocks. So.
They're fearless.
Yeah.
I will say as a side note here before we wrap up, I did watch a game yesterday. Heavily good friend Kyle bringing a heavy proxy Skaven army against. Bench Muller, the TO of T-Shift, and he does bring the Gav Bomb, and he went up against a bunch of Plague Monks, and those Plague Monks, I think on a 6-to-hit or a 6-to-wound or double damage, and run -1. Is that right, John?
6-to-wound or double damage, and 6-to-hit or rend 1.
Okay, yeah, so we diced that out because we had to use the dice app. The Plague Monks had so many attacks, and I think I saw out of the 20-man Sequitur unit, or no, it was the Evocator.
I was going to say, doesn't Ben use a 20-man Evocator unit?
He uses 20 Evocators and 20 Sequiturs in 2 separate units. And yeah, I saw something like 16 or 17 Evocators die in 1 round of combat from Plague Monks alone. It was kind of incredible to watch all those AP-1, 2 damage attacks that actually came through. The dice were just incredible on that one.
Yeah, plague monks are gross, and if you buff them up, they're the grossest thing in the game.
Yeah, pretty much.
The evocator bomb is like even more of a double-edged sword, because they'll hit even harder than the sequitur bomb will, but it's also 800 points for 20 of them.
Yeah, yeah. And in that particular list build that we had talked about, boarding where units can come back on a 5-up, evocators cannot come back on a 5-up, is that right?
Correct, yeah, so it's just the sequiturs, so... Yeah, it's a cool list. It's kind of dice dependent, and then there are a couple matchups where you just you kind of almost. I hate saying auto lose because the mission design in AoE is pretty good, where there aren't a lot of auto lose matchups, but it can just be real, real hard to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Well, you know, we'll definitely see if there's more grav bomb at BAO. Who knows? John, are there any new aspects of BAO that we should be expecting in the months to come?
Oh, sure. Not anything particular. I would say to anybody who's interested, download the packet, read the packet, practice the missions. Do not get caught out, particularly you, Matthew. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and email it to you right now.
Personally.
And if you like, I could maybe do a WebEx with you later in the week. You know, I'm actually traveling for business. I'm heading out like 6 a.m. tomorrow. So I'm at the hotel this week. If you need me to read the missions to you,
that would be
I have plenty of time for that. So
proven multiple times on top tables in tournaments, reading missions is not my strong suit.
That's okay. We'll help you out. That's what being teammates is all about, man. We got you. And so as I'm finishing up giving Matthew a little bit of a hard time here, I'm on chapter 6, the wood crunches of my Hennessy, and I'm about to have my chapter 7 finale, the infinite echo.
We'll end on that. Hit us.
Ah, delicious. Alex, take us away.
Yeah, and just to let everyone know, BAO, as reference, is going to be a part of KubaCon this year in the Bay Area. It is going to be on May 25th and 26th. You know, there's going to be a 40K event and an Age of Sigmar Champions event. Both are going to be ITC. And as referenced a little earlier or several times in this podcast today, T-Shift is going to be August 4th and 5th of this year. For all you Age of Sigmar players out there that do want to go up to the Seattle area for a tournament, they are looking for tickets are up right now, and Ben is eagerly awaiting signups to get projected number of tables. So if you guys are interested in that event in August, do sign up and do purchase a ticket when you're able to. That being
buy
said,
that ticket. Do not be the person who's holding off buying their ticket to wait and see if it gets to be GT and 20 people. If everybody who thinks they're going to go would just buy the ticket, we would know that it's a GT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And do not hesitate. It is certainly going to be a GT. So get those tickets in soon. I know I will. How about you, John?
Oh, yeah. I'm figuring out my travel right now. Like I said, got a few business trips planned, and that is definitely on my list. As you may not know, I'm actually running a large 40K event in late July, so we'll more info on that coming, but I still want to try to make it to T-Shift. So much fun.
Perfect. And we know Matthew's going to show up.
Yes. Yeah, I'll try and win a couple games before I lose on some weird mission technicality I didn't read.
Three of his thumbs are going to tear it up.
Yeah.
Tear what up? That's the question. Hey.
Woohoo! Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening to Wide World of Gaming. Be sure to rate us on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, do check out our Facebook page for the Wide World of Wargaming. There you can find links for not only Age of Sigmar downloads, but also the 40K and the X-Wing podcast from the Wide World of Wargaming. Again, thank you for listening. This is Alex, Matthew, and John signing off.
Later.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.